on your part.
Welcome to the On Track and Field podcast. I'm your host, JT Ayers. All things track and field related, go to ontrackandfield.com. They have exactly what you need, and it's a good website. I get all my equipment there, and I'm a head coach, and I want the best of the best for my athletes, so they have the best opportunities to succeed. So go to ontrackandfield.com, and at checkout, just type in Track Talk in that little discount promo code. You're going to get 15% off right there. And if you have any issues, just look them up in their social media accounts, and their CEO is going to get back to you. He's that type of guy. Ontrackandfield.com is where it is at. With me right now is Coach Ty Davis. First an athlete, then a coach, and he's been everywhere. I mean, he's been in Texas, and he's been back to California, and now he's back in Texas. But what makes him real interesting is that not only is he a coach, but he's a dad. And he's a dad of a, well, I'm just going to say it, a world-renowned athlete in Tara Davis, who represented the United States in the long jump. If you ever saw her in high school, my gosh, she can hurdle. But she did a lot of different things, and we're going to talk about what it looks like to be a dad and a coach. And, I mean, he's still in kind of in that world, and it'd be really interesting to gain his insights. So, Ty, thanks for joining me right now.
No problem. I appreciate you having me on, and look forward to this discussion.
All right, let's jump right into it. Everyone's wondering it because I'm wondering it. What's it like to be a coach dad for little kids that care so much about being as good as they can be? How did you balance the coach and the dad?
Wow, it was definitely an evolving process. Especially as a little kid, because for coaching and putting the dad values in there when they're young, it's still all about having fun. And so just being able to utilize the kids' energy to help center everything. One of the things I say, though, that helped me, and it is really no secret to it, but Tara was successful as a young age. So being successful at that young age, and she learned to listen to me as a coach. And so that, as the success grew, the trust grew as a coach, and then the dad piece just went along right with it. So it wasn't a fact of, and I talk to parents all the time. It's like, well, my child just won't listen to me, even though I've done this and I've done that. And sometimes you just get lucky. And since I've been coaching her since she was little, that's who she learned to listen to at that time. But even like when she was four, right? It was just about having fun. She didn't care about winning or anything like that. She just wanted a certain colored ribbon, right? Pink ribbon was the best ribbon for her. Didn't matter. She wanted that pink ribbon. But then it started to grow a little bit after that. And as a dad, it was having these conversations about sacrifice early, and not just tying it into the track world, but just trying to tie it into the world of what you have to do to succeed in this world. And that was really installed at an early age. To this day, she got a tattoo that says sacrifice. Not probably what I really wanted to hear, but it hung in there with her, and she understood no matter what she wanted in this world, she's gonna have to sacrifice a lot to get there. And she did, and she definitely did. I remember as a probably 8-9-year-old, knowing that there was a track meet on Saturday, that she couldn't spend a night with some friends on Friday, because as a dad and a coach, I held myself responsible for putting her in the best position to succeed. And I knew if she was tired that she wouldn't be able to succeed. And, I saw plenty of parents that had sleepovers and kids in the pool, and they'd come out and the kid would cry because they would get beat very badly that next day. I just held myself accountable for not putting them in that position, because that's my goal is to have them happy at the end of the day after they finish that track meet.
So Tara has this infectious personality. I mean, I saw it when she was in eighth grade, she went to an all-comers meet in Simi Valley, and she was all over, social media about, like, she's beating all the seniors, she's crushing it. So this infectious personality, this overabundance of person, she's just all, it's hard not to like her. I mean, I think she made me clap every time she did a long jump at the state meet her senior year. And so how did you, as a dad and a coach, how did you balance like, all right, we need to be bubbly, but we also need to be focused. We need to be good in an interview, but we can't be obnoxious. Like, how do you deal with all those things?
That's a really good question. It's something that I had to grow to as well. You know, being an athlete, I wasn't, you know, I like to have fun when I was as an athlete. And even I talked to some of my old coaches and old teammates. I mean, I would kid around and joke, but get the work in. But as a coach, you tend to get more stern, right? And as a dad as well, but you tend to get more stern and focus in, and you want your kid to focus. Well, I started to notice when she started focusing too much, she didn't do well. And so I came up with this phrase for her, is like, her unfocus is her focus. And it is truly that. And that's, you know, we allowed her to be herself, encouraged to have fun, be respectful, obviously. And that was the main thing, is just be respectful to the other teammates, and try to help and be encouraging to them, no matter what team they're on. And, you know, it just, you know, once again, kind of that, you know, luck of the draw that she took that teachings in, and she went ahead and followed that. But it is, you know, there are those times I'm like, oh man, I wish she would have focused on this. But, you know, then I see her a different focus in. And, you know, they've been plenty of coaches that come to me and says, no, she's just hugging them to get them feel that everything's okay. And then she's going to go beat them again. So it's like, so those are the things that I definitely saw. And I had to explain that to the first world team that she made it to, the youth team, when she was 14. You know, they literally called me and her mom over to the hotel that they were, the team hotel, and they said, we're in Cali, Colombia. And they said, man, your daughter's all over the place. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, she's just not really focused in. She's at other, you know, they go to the stadium, she's visiting with the other countries, and she's just not really focused in on what she's there to do. And I said, hey guys, just let her do what she needs to do and she'll be fine. And that's when she won gold for her first USA team. And it was the first gold that USA had won in long jump. And they recognized, okay, you just have to let this kid be her, and she's going to focus in when it's time to focus in.
Yeah, it's incredible. So, I mean, I've seen her, and you've been coaching her from youth and going on. And I know you guys have always had these aspirations of, I mean, she went to a great college right out of high school. And then I know there was a switch. How involved have you been in her, in not just as a coach, but also as a mentor and a guide, from everything between right after high school? Because basically our kids are adults once they leave high school. And so now you're a dad of a adult athlete, professional now, and she's going through all these different things. She has to make wise decisions, including what happens in Japan. How involved are you in her career and also as a coach in all those things now?
Yeah, it's ever changing now. I kind of look at myself as her advisor on certain things, trying to let her make some decisions, trying to advise her on certain things. It was, you know, obviously it was, you know, I was right there with her on her first choice of going to Georgia. We laid some things out. We loved Coach Flo, who was at Kentucky at the time. But when we visited Kentucky, we did not like Kentucky as far as the, you know, the atmosphere. And, you know, she's a big football fan, and Kentucky didn't have a good football team. And, you know, we went, looked at Georgia, and they had a great football team, great coach, good teammates. And that's one thing she wanted. And we talked about, I asked her a couple of things. Do you want to go to a college town atmosphere, or do you want to go to a place that a college is just there and the city surrounding it, such as Austin, actually, such as UCLA, USC, right? You know, those are places that, you know, even though you have a college there, it's that the town's not about the college. Georgia and Athens is about the college. So it was a very home feeling, which was great. We loved Georgia, absolutely loved Georgia, and the atmosphere and football was good. And she didn't want to go to a place that she was number one going in, which is, you know, was at that time coming out of high school. Yeah. It was few and far between, right? She didn't want to go to a college like she was the savior. She wanted to still be able to enjoy herself at college without the pressure of having to immediately be the number one person on the team, right? The, you know, going to as a captain, because she had done that all her life, right? She had been, you know, high school, one of the better kids on the high school team. And so she wanted to go to a college that already had some very high level individuals. So she's not just looked at as the goat walking in, so to say.
Yeah.
So that's what Georgia was at, that that piece. So we sat down, talked about it, knew it was a long ways away, but said it's a flight away no matter where you are. So let's not worry about it. And made that decision. So, and those are the types of things we still sit down to today, try to make. I just sat down with her and we have some more continued conversations about the 2022 schedule and what you want to do and when are we going to start the workouts and, you know, how are you going to do this and how's your health plan going to work and those types of things we still sit down and talk about.
So speak to me about what you do with your high school kid, especially when they're being recruited. How did it go? I mean, you guys were obviously heavily recruited, I would imagine.
Yes.
So how are you sitting down and picking your five colleges to decide and then like to even just visit? And then what does that look like for, you know, a dad and a coach trying to navigate all those things? And what are you looking for?
Well, it was easy in a, well, it was difficult, but but one of the things that I think it was to my advantage being a coach is knowing really the same way I picked a high school. A little different for a high school that we had a chance to choose. It was about talking to the coach and figure out what they wanted and having my being able to have my involvement in it. As a college, it was more about where has this coach, what has he done with an athlete who came in with lower marks? Has he been able to improve them? And has that been consistent?
Imagine that, right?
Yeah, really. So right, it's yeah. Like, you know, don't look at, you know, it's easy. I hate to say it's easy, but it is easy to get a number one and continue to keep them at number one.
Sure.
What's hard is to get that number four and then push them to number one.
Right.
And I felt that, I had my limits as a coach without, you know, when I felt when they went to college, they're going to have a lot more health, their nutrition, their weight room, all of those things are going to be in one area and very controlled. So I needed to know that someone was going to be able to have her advance in the way that we wanted to advance, as well as has aspirations for her to be a professional, aspirations for her to be a Olympian, which is interesting because, you know, some coaches, they want them for the 4 years. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm walking in saying, we want to do this 1 to 2 years and be able to get out of here and turn pro. You know, of course, we didn't know about COVID and transferring and all those other things, yeah. Right?
Never goes to plan.
Yes, exactly right. So, you know, choosing that college, I think you just have to sit down with the coach. And it's such a crapshoot because you don't know if the coach is going to be there the next 2 years or not.
Right.
So they have to really enjoy the surroundings of where they were. And to this day, Tara will tell you, she missed Georgia. Georgia was she absolutely loved Georgia. That was, you know, and we did as well. Athens was an amazing place, but, you know, obviously it just wasn't working out with the coaching environment. That's probably something that I didn't really focus in on as much is what is my daughter used to as a coach and what type of coach am I going to? And what can she handle mentally with that switch? Where I'm a very laid back, I'm going to explain to you what you did wrong. I'm going to explain to you what you did right. And we're going to continue to do those things right. And we're going to try to improve the things we do wrong.
Oh, my gosh. And, you sound like a long jump coach.
And see, and, you know, for, you know, her coach in Georgia, he was a little bit more emotional. Hmm. And Tara, obviously, she's emotional. So if she sees you upset emotionally, it takes her focus off of what you're trying to say to her because she just hears tone. So where Coach Flo was a very even tone guy too. And he probably says a few choice words that I had never really got into her and said, but it was still not at a level of him yelling at her. It was at a level of him directing her. And, I think that was her turning point is being able to get to a coach with similar attributes as her dad / coach and, sure. And be able to focus in on his words and not, you know, focus in on the message and not the way the words are being given to her and being delivered.
Yeah. It's one of the benefits of being a coach dad, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you know your kid better than anybody.
Absolutely.
And I mean, they also know how to push your buttons and you know how to push their buttons. So you got to be cautious with that. So, I mean, and ironically, I mean, we're all here out here, big fans of her in, you know, California where she went to high school, watching this unfold. And ironically, I mean, the whole Georgia staff is kind of, you know, changed, you know,
it's
hindsight, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Why Texas? Why does she, I mean, if mind me asking, why, I mean, no, of all the places she could have gone, why there?
Well, one, Texas was always her first choice of schools. That was, you know, Texas had been her school. Us being originally from Texas, we, University of Texas has always been on her mind, my mind, 100%. So bad that the University of Oklahoma recruited her. And I'm like, nah, there's no way it can happen, guys. So, she was going to go to the University of Texas, but they had some coaching problems there at the time. And everything was in turmoil. She heard too much from the girls that were there. I mean, she had gone to a University of Texas camp at 13. And so, that was her focus. So when she went to Georgia, and things didn't work out. Once again, she loved Coach Flo, who was at Kentucky, but he ended up getting a job at Texas. So she wasn't feeling it. So when she decided to get in the portal, it was really go back to California, look at UCLA, USC possibly, or let's look at Baylor, TCU, and Texas. Those are the schools that we went back and looked at, and Texas was the one, obviously one of the number one choices in general because it was Texas, and now Coach Flo is there. So hey, it happened to work out because when you get in the portal, you have no idea who has room on their scholarships to bring you in. So it was we had decided if we couldn't go exactly where we want, we might have to sit out a half a year. There's all kinds of things that we might have to
do. Well, I know it was scary for a little bit, too, because nobody knew. You basically had to wait till the NCAA came down and said thumbs up, but you didn't know which way it was going to go, right?
Yeah, and really they went thumbs down because Georgia didn't release her, and so she had to sit for a year, it was tough. It was tough, especially because only reason that she didn't get to compete is because of the coach that she was leaving didn't want her to compete against him after he had trained her for the first half of the year. So it was, but then again, he leaves and can go do whatever he wants to do. So, it's funny. Even Coach Flo said, it changed his outlook on things to see, it's about the kids. What are we doing here? You're not allowing a kid to compete for your own selfish, self-interest. It's all about the kids.
And it's crazy. So, we have to remind ourselves that, right?
Like, exactly. It's
like, how come that's not the norm? Like, I know you're in however you think, how good you think you are, or whatever university or whatever. It's like, still, I talked to a decathlete, just earlier this last week. He's a professional decathlete, and he's like, it's still about him. What I mean? Like, it's like people still are investing in me, and I'm 26. Like, I still feel like it's track and field is one of those amazing sports where we root for people, we root for good marks, we want to see USA win. Like, I wanted to see Tara do it. Like, she was crushing it. And to be quite honest, I don't know what your guys' expectations were, but my family was super proud of her, and we're excited what the next 3 years and 3 years, what it's going to look like. And, so explain Japan. Like, what was that about? What was that all about? And there's not a lot of stuff coming out of it except like, oh my gosh, I had a trouble acclimating, and I had a really, really tough time acclimating when I got home. Even her boyfriend, Hunter, he put something on Twitter saying, because he did the Olympics right after her, and he was like, oh man, it's been like 2 weeks and I'm still messed up.
Yeah, it was, I tell you, the one thing that is from the beginning, there was multiple tests that we had to take before we left. So COVID test, you had to self-administer, you had to upload it to a website, you had to show proof. So then, of course, it's a 13-hour or so flight. You had to keep a mask on the whole time. And then, when you get there, you have processing. And there's like no one in Japan's airport, just people flying in. You had to have a letter from a government to allow you in the country. Yeah. And so if everything wasn't in place, I saw some guy get turned around in Dallas's airport because he didn't have all his things together to get into the country. So they sent him back to Houston or whatever. So there was
an Olympic athlete. They turned around.
It was one of the coaches.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. So he just couldn't get in. So he had, I'm sure he went and got everything back together, but it was, you had to have everything down. Basically, you had to have a folder of all your documents, and it was, Japan is very strict. So it was, let me see your documents. Okay, go over there. And they go, let me see your documents. Okay, go over there. Let me see you. I was like, wait a minute. I couldn't have gotten past the first guy to get to you, but they wanted to see him every single time. So, you know, you get over there, and as coaches, it was really weird because we weren't at the Olympic Village as a coach. We're in hotels. So the athletes were at the Olympic Village, but they were separated a lot as well. But they did have a training facility where Tara and I would go to that had lounges and had the food there. And so we really got to sit there, and that's where a lot of athletes would go. So we got to talk to some of the people that were fencers and some of the people that were, you know, trampolinists, and, you know, so all these different sports we were able to run into there and just be able to, you know, kind of talk sports, and they had their sport on TV. So we would talk, you know, ask those dad questions, right? You know, and, you know, how'd you get them into trampoline, and how did you, you know, what made you think you'd be a fencer? You know, those types of things, right? So is it hot in that helmet? You know, just those weird questions, but you're now able to talk to a high level athlete about it.
Yeah, and the highest. That's cool. Yeah,
exactly. So just being around that was a great experience. Japan was shut down, so we didn't get to explore. You know, the country is beautiful, but you just didn't get to get out. They warned you. We got people looking at you, watching you. But then you look around, you saw plenty of people. You know how California got shut down, Texas got shut down. We didn't. You didn't go to work. You stayed at home. No, Japan, they still were going to work. They still were, you know, public transportation, all those things. So it was a different experience in the country. The stadium was very eerie because it was odd. They didn't allow coaches in the stadium either unless you had a certain pass. And that was seemed like only like 20% people did that. I was let in for the long jump specifically that day, but couldn't get in there any other day. So if I wanted to watch the 100 on the day before, I couldn't get in there and watch that. I would just have to, you know, so I just got to get in there of the day and, you know, look and be in there with, I don't know, 100 people in a stadium that sit 67,000. So it was very quiet, very eerie, which for, I mean, obviously you've seen Tara, she likes to interact with the crowd. And so you're interacting with just maybe some coaches and some athletes that might be still there. So it was it wasn't as emotionally charged as we might want, but it was still an experience that I wouldn't trade it for the world. I mean, you know, in December, we, like I said, we didn't expect to be there. But, you know, she wasn't, you know, she was just now getting back into form after all her injury. So being there, you know, obviously we say, hey, they gave us a ticket. They got in trouble. So now we're going to try to win it. But, you know, didn't go as planned. Very upset about it. You know, as a coach and a former athlete, you don't want to hear, well, sixth is great at Olympics. Yeah, it sounds great to you, but that wasn't on my board that said my goal is sixth, you know? So we would have rather medaled than obviously rather took first, but you know, it's kind of one of those, you know, finger pointing things. It's all right. You guys got us this time. We know what we need to do next time to come back and get it.
Man, with an attitude like that, how are you not going to win the next 3 years, right? I mean, and even that, like, I remember, you know, Tara was just crushing it, and I was like, oh no, she's doing it too early. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh no. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the case. Like, she stayed strong that whole time and made it to the Olympics, but just making it isn't what you guys were about. You guys had, you know, bigger aspirations. And, you know, how do you compete overseas? Like, how was she even able to be that successful? Because there's a lot of American athletes that did terrible over there and terrible in their mind, right?
Yeah.
And then they come back home and they, you know, re-pick themselves up. I mean, right now, the American sprinters are crushing it right now.
Yeah.
But yet we couldn't do that over there. I mean, how was she able to be successful to the extent that she was with no crowd, with COVID regulations, with, you know, basically having trouble to even be with her coach and her dad, like all these things, including the time difference. Like, we can't forget that.
You know, I think it's a lot of it was me being there. You know, I was that constant, hey, let's hang out, you know, hey, relax. Whereas, you know, a lot of athletes, they just looking at each other, their training partners maybe, and their coach. So, you know, a lot of them still look towards family. So, you know, they're having to think about even that one girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever the case may be, that isn't there at that time to be by their side. You know, I can't imagine, you know, what Tara would have done. You know, I know she would have still done well, but I think it helped her to say, hey, Dad, let's go to the training center and hang out and have dinner and, you know, watch the rest of the meets. And now we can go over her training videos and I can go look at that and we can kind of just, you know, really relax and mentally not focus on, oh, I do good. Okay, what am I going to do? Just 100% focus on that. We can break up that focus. And she was able to relax a little bit more than some of the other athletes. And I think that, especially for the first timers, you know, you still had, you know, some good ones like a Thing Mo that really did her thing. But you know, like you said, it was hard overall on some of the athletes to be able to focus in and to tap into what they needed.
That's interesting. Not every coach got to go either. No. You know, it seems like you were pretty lucky to be able to go. I mean, I talked to some coaches that they're like, they're not even letting me go. You know, they're not letting private coaches go or whatever.
But and you know, what's odd about it, which a lot of people didn't know, you know, for those private coaches, it's on their dime. So, you know, USA isn't coming through and saying, okay, I'm going to pay for your, you know, $2,000 flight and your rooms at $250 a night. And you're going to be there for 7 nights. So here's another $1,800 of that. And oh yeah, by the way, your lunch and dinner is on you too. And, you know, so it was, you know, that's just an expensive flight and the whole expensive, you know, route that you have to go.
So you paid for everything?
Yeah.
Wait, is that normal? Is that just this year?
Yeah, that's normal. That's normal for them, for the private coaches. It's or, you know, any of the, you know, unless you're, because, you know, they have their own USA coaches that they choose each year.
They get paid. They get their
flight. They get all that stuff. So if you're a private coach and luckily I was a USATF accredited coach and we've always knew to make sure that I'm on as the coach, no matter who the coach really is, like Coach Flo was there and Coach Flo was at the Olympic trials, but I was still on her paperwork as her coach. That way I can get down into the, once again, I like being right there. So, you know, even though Coach Flo might be there, the emotion that she might need or something that warm and fuzzy, I'm still right there with her. And so she's able to see me there and then still listen to her coach and it just would work out fine. But yeah, a lot of coaches didn't get a chance to go. Wow. It's just expensive.
You know. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you lived the dream and you still are. I mean, a dad that got to take his kid to the Olympics to compete.
Yeah.
I'm nervous just watching the AYSO soccer game down the street, you know? And like, so let me ask you one last question. And this purely out of just my own, you know, curiosity. Uh-huh. Why long jump? Why not stick with the hurdles?
Oh, wow. You know, so of course, long jump was her first love. And the only reason that was her first love was really at her age when she was young, it was one of the first things that she could do. And, you know, Tara was, she was never the fastest. You know, she was always, you know, good, but just not the fastest. But she was very technical. She's always been technical. Hence, here comes the hurdles. The goal was to have hurdles at the Olympic trials, to do hurdles at Olympic trials. She had qualified. But at the, I think it was Big 12, one of the meets before that, she had actually, strained her hamstring. And actually was in practice. She strained her hamstring. So we knew she couldn't do the hurdles. We were hoping that she can get back to them, but we were just like, okay, let's, your marks on long jump are off the charts right now. The hurdles, we know it's going to be a battle, but we felt that she was improving in them. She ran a 12.6. So we knew that, you know, she could get down into the 12.4s to 12.3s possibly. But even during long jump, I mean, she went from a very short approach, you know, all the way through the NCAA finals, she was on a short approach run, half approach actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What, so like 10 steps?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
It was 10 steps. So she won.
That's sad. I know. She's winning. That's intimidation when like the competition sees her at 10 and they're way back there.
Yeah. So, we knew, and it was Coach Flo was so great with this and I had to support him. I was like, listen, this is what we're going to go in. Our main goal is to make the Olympics. So let's keep you ramp back some so we can see if we can get there. So let's just keep it at a short approach. And that's why it was such a battle at the finals. She's jumping 21.11. Everybody's jumping at 20, but she's going at half approach to get there. So, you know, when, so we had, that's why we had scratched the hurdles in the at the finals of the NCAA, and then decided there's no reason to three rounds. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to just tempt fate. So to say, let's go ahead and keep focus on the long jump, because you were even able to do it at a short approach and keep that rhythm. And, you know, obviously, you know, with hurdles, it's all about that rhythm.
Oh, but, yeah, absolutely.
But believe you me, the hurdles will be back. Yes, the hurdles will be back. We're going to we would love to double at the Olympics in 3 years, but we have a lot of things to go through before we get there. But she'll be doubling at a couple of meets, and then focusing in on one or the other at some meets this coming 2022.
Good for her. Well, we're big fans. We're big fans, and gosh, even after listening to this podcast, I'm telling you, man, I'm a big fan of you now. So
appreciate you,
Coach. You're doing a great job, and not only that, but just talking to us and talking to the audience about navigating being a dad and being a coach and being, you know, not even just when to flip that switch, but also knowing that, like, hey, I'm your dad when I'm your coach, and I'm your coach when I'm your dad.
Absolutely.
And keeping it less emotional and fun. And the one thing that I would say, even to this, the highest level in her sport, is that she still looks like she's having fun. Absolutely. When she puts a cowboy hat on and she's jumping around. And I know there's some other people that it's going to ruffle feathers.
Oh, yeah.
You know what?
Yeah, always, right?
Yeah, who cares? She gets to be in a Visa commercial, and they don't. So, you know, whatever. Yep. Appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on. And, no, I mean, I think you and I can go for another 2 hours. I really enjoyed talking to you. This podcast is brought to you by On Track and Field. And Coach Ty Davis, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem, Coach. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the All On Track and Field podcast with this week's guest, Coach Ty Davis, and our host, JT Ayers. For all your track and field needs, be it for competition or practice, check us out online at ontrackandfield.com and make sure to enter the word Track Talk upon checkout to save up to 15% on all things track and field related. And be sure to follow us on our socials at On Track, the letter N, Field, at On Track and Field.